You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty. President Trump is digging in on his promised tariffs on foreign aluminum and steel. 10% on imported aluminum, 25% on imported steel. That announcement sent the stock market tumbling and got our European and Canadian allies talking about possible trade wars, retaliatory tariffs on American-made products. And the pushback from the president's own party is growing. House Speaker Ryan has split with the president. The House Speaker opposes the tariffs, and congressional Republicans are figuring out how to block them. What could all of this mean for the U.S. auto industry? Kristen Jicek is here with us now, director of the Industry, Labor, and Economics Group at the Center for Automotive Research. Kristen, welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me.
So the president says globalization is wiping out our middle class, and getting tough on foreign steel and aluminum is a way to even the playing field for the U.S. steel and aluminum industries. Is he right on that?
There is a problem with aluminum and steel production and output in the global economy, largely because China has grown from being a very insignificant producer to supporting a huge growth in steel and aluminum production capacity. Now, the U.S. auto industry does not use a lot of Chinese steel, but the effect of that is that it pressures price downward. And so the prices have been low. And if we have a trade protection around the U.S. industry, then prices will rise because we'll be pushed more toward domestic sources. And even those domestic sources, those mills that produce aluminum and steel in the United States, may have imported inputs to their process that will also be affected by this.
So it's not as simple as what I think we're hearing from the president telling, for example, the car makers will go back to buying mostly American-made steel.
They already do. Canada is our largest steel and aluminum importer. The president's action is under something called 232, which is a provision of trade law that allows you to say, we're trading a really important good that's important for our military with somebody who might be potentially hostile or that we might go to war with. So we will have this supply coming from someone that might not want to supply us. Other than a movie that John Candy made many years ago, I don't think we're having a war with Canada.
Certainly, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has taken great umbrage at this implication that national security is in.
Well, it's a very strange use of national security and claiming economic security is national security, which, you know, that's probably true. But for this provision of this trade law, it's a very unusual interpretation. While we don't buy a lot of Chinese steel or aluminum, that having that capacity and that overcapacity in the global market pressures prices downward. Now, if the U.S. does enact these trade barriers, all of that steel and aluminum that might have been coming to the U.S. from other trading partners will be diverted to other markets. And if the U.S. 232 case holds, what's to stop them from saying, national security, we're going to put up a trade barrier to that imported steel and aluminum as well? And it's a very strange situation to be in.
And certainly we hear and we can read presidential tweets punching back at Canada and at Europe, warning, all right, EU, if you retaliate with tariffs on U.S. products like jeans and Kentucky bourbon, I'm going to slap a tariff on European cars. What does all of that mean for U.S. car makers?
Well, you know, the United States auto industry, which, you know, is made up of German and Japanese and Korean and U.S. producers, this is a very globally integrated industry. And we buy a lot of parts and components here in the U.S. from all of our trading partners, and they buy parts and components from us. So, you know, what does it mean for the tariff on EU vehicles? We don't yet know what he's going to produce or what the tariff might be. On the campaign trail, he said 35%. A lot of the vehicles that come from, say, Germany, for example, are luxury vehicles. But even at that price point, no one's going to absorb a 35% price increase on a 7 Series.
No, they're not. And as he accuses the Europeans of making it impossible for our cars to sell it there, if we have a trade war, that isn't going to help, is it?
It's going to make it more difficult. And it's true. Germany sends about 500,000 vehicles to the U.S. market annually. In 2017, that was where we were. And we send about 61,000 vehicles there. Right now, say with China, we send about 250,000 vehicles to China, and they send us 25,000 vehicles under the brand names of Buick and Volvo. So we're very integrated. And there's also a thing called comparative advantage. So when you get into trade, or even in multilateral trade especially, but when you get into trade, there are some things that countries are better at than others, or maybe they have the right climate one of my favorite things in the world is tequila. And it's grown and made in Mexico and very few other places. So if you want to have that in your country, you need to trade for it. And what are you good at making? What do you do well and very efficiently? And that's how you get involved in trading agreements with the rest of the world. What is your comparative advantage? And what does the other country or the rest of the world have that you need?
Does making foreign product more costly bring more business to U.S. companies?
Not necessarily. It does raise prices on U.S. consumers. And the U.S. consumers will see this first. The retaliation often does not come in the same form that the trade action took place. So we're putting a tariff on steel and aluminum, and we're getting back responses on bourbon and orange juice and motorcycles. You may recall that there's something called the chicken tax in the auto industry. There was a dispute in 1963 over frozen chicken exports to Europe. And in some complicated, I wasn't around, I don't know, some complicated mechanism, we ended up with a 25% tariff on imported pickup trucks to the United States. And there were a number of other provisions of that trade measure at the time. The only one that survives is this 25% tariff on pickup trucks, which is called the chicken tax because it was a fight about frozen chicken exports from the United States. So, you know, the thing is, the U.S. is a big exporter of agricultural goods. The agricultural sector is likely to be harmed by this action to protect the U.S. steel and aluminum industries. There is a case that there's global overcapacity and that prices are artificially low. There is a case that some of this matters to national security and to our military. The issue that many people have with this action is that it's entirely broad. It does not say this particular type of steel, form of steel, grade of aluminum, this particular trading partner. It's all steel and aluminum products, all trading partners. And that's very unusual.
What do you think is the best plan of action for U.S. carmakers in response to the possibility of these tariffs coming down?
Well, the United States auto industry does not like uncertainty. You can see that in how they plan and produce vehicles. So a vehicle may run 5 or 6 years in production. Before they start production of that vehicle, they lock in their steel or aluminum suppliers on long-term contracts. There are some provisions that if the price varies, that you can come back and renegotiate, but there's nothing in there usually about putting on a 25% tariff or a 10% tariff. Right now, we're at a point in the auto industry where we just tipped over. We had a peak year in 2016. 2017 was down about 2% in terms of U.S. auto sales. The pricing is starting to soften a little bit, so U.S. auto prices are not keeping up with inflation, so there's not as much pricing power. The price of a used vehicle is at a 10-year low. That's the best substitute for a new vehicle is a used vehicle, and there's plenty of used vehicles in supply. That's why the prices are depressed. This could impact sales and production in the United States. What we should do is work with our trading partners and work to contain China. China's overcapacity is what is pressuring prices downward. It's what's making it difficult for any domestic steel and aluminum producers in the U.S., in Canada, in Mexico, or Germany to be able to compete in the world market. So what we really should do is take on the real problem, which is Chinese overcapacity.
Kristin Jicek, Director of the Industry, Labor, and Economics Group at the Center for Automotive Research. Thanks so much, Kristin.
You're welcome, Cindy.